Chapter 13, Industrial Evolution of a Port City. Although the lucrative whale fishery provided the means for New Bedford's explosive growth, the port city's evolution required individual vision, innovation, and a collective entrepreneurial spirit. This vision, combined with the spirit of commercial success, drove individual risk-takers, along with their families and associates, to build efficient and self-reinforcing business networks in not only New Bedford and New England, but throughout the world. As whaling began its mid-19th century decline, these family networks turned their successful investment and management strategies toward diversification. Entrepreneurs built on their strengths in banking and finance, and by pioneering startups in railroads, textiles, coal pockets, and manufacturing. New Bedford holds a rare position in America as a city that evolved from the nation's greatest whaling port to the third largest cotton processing center and leader of fine cotton goods manufacturing. At times, it housed the most modern and largest steam engine, weave shed, and other superlatives long since forgotten. Acushnet Mills offers an example of how successful business practices in whaling translated into other less risky operations. Whaling agents Joseph F. Knowles and Horatio Hathaway founded the textile mill in 1881. Although both men amassed their fortunes by investing in perilous whaling voyages, they reduced their exposure to any one voyage's loss by diversifying their investments in several. Families further enabled this profitability by investing their capital in the support industries needed by the industries themselves, a form of vertical integration. This strategy provides one aspect of the managerial and ownership model that changed significantly as manufacturing grew in New Bedford, where many of the mill firms were incorporated. These business models, combined with the physical infrastructure along the waterfront, which was initially developed for whaling, gave New Bedford's business community a leg up on other cities. One of the first moves to expand from a maritime city was the introduction of rail transport. In 1840, the New Bedford and Taunton Railroad provided the first reliable, non-water-based method of getting people, raw material, and goods to and from the city. Rail transport dramatically altered the city's industrial landscape and triggered the development of new industries. Abraham Howland, Joseph C. Delano, and Henry T. Wood formed the Wamsutta Mills in 1846 with a charter that allowed production of cotton, wool, or iron. They soon brought aboard Joseph Grinnell, who became president. Wamsutta rapidly expanded into one of the nation's largest textile mills, growing from its original 16,000 spindles and 200 looms to 8 mills operating 236,000 spindles, 7,300 looms, and employing over 2,000 people in 1885. Wamsutta eventually set the trend for rapid growth in New Bedford and nearby Fall River, which quickly became early examples of an economic cluster of textile mills. They drew immigrant workers from French-speaking Quebec province in Canada and from Portugal and Cabo Verde, to name a few. While whaling voyages had offered the means by which most of the culturally diverse populations initially arrived in New Bedford, continued immigration and sustainability depended strongly upon the expansion of the local industrial base. The last whaler left New Bedford in 1925. In that year, there were 70 mills making cotton cloth on nearly 3,600,000 spindles and 55,679 looms. Cotton served as the economic force driving the city, having stepped in to generate its explosive growth just as whaling met its final days. The mills, with their workforce of 41,380, certainly changed the face of the city. From its physical layout to its social and political dynamic, as the mills gave rise to several innovative product manufacturing industries. Virtually all the 40 to 45 mills operating in the city beginning in 1846 closed their doors to southern and eventually offshore competition by 1958. Today, New Bedford hosts one true clothing manufacturer, Joseph Aboud Manufacturing, established in 1975 on the basis of the city's substantial labor pool of cutters and stitchers. Many of the original mill buildings still exist and are popularly known by their original names. Concurrent with the growth in textiles, other industries arose along the river, including boiler making, large-scale wood milling, carriage manufacture, gold and silver plating, shoe manufacture, copper production, ironwork, and a widening range of niche products that require manufacturing. The diverse manufacturing industry continued to thrive into the late 20th century, even when the national trend toward offshore manufacturing led to steep declines. Highly innovative manufacturers remain, such as Titleist, which evolved from the historic Acushnet Rubber Company into an international leader in manufacturing golf balls, golf equipment, and apparel. Innovative companies continue to succeed, creatively leveraging knowledge, skills, and applications from historic whaling. Nye Lubricants was founded in 1884, shortly after the height of the whaling era. The company's best-known product for more than a century was whale and dolphin-based lubricating oil. The company has since transformed into an innovative synthetic lubricant developer with increasingly short product development cycles and a product line supporting worldwide engineering research and development. Back on the waterfront, as whaling-related shipbuilding declined, a new pleasure craft market started to take hold. While sailing for pleasure was still a novelty for most citizens, the bay's reliable afternoon sou'westers, its snug and picturesque anchorages, and its temperate waters had already begun to work their magic on those with the money and summertime leisure to enjoy them. In the period 1885 to 87, yachtsmen with deep ties to the bay came to national and international prominence as defenders of the America's Cup. Buzzards Bay has been a home to yachting enthusiasts ever since, and regularly welcomes many tall ships. Some of these ships are the schooner Ernestina Morrissey, sister ships the Portuguese Navy training ship Sagres, and the United States Coast Guard cutter Eagle. In 2014, the bay saw the homecoming of the whale ship Charles W. Morgan. Profile: New Bedford class. After the Civil War, New Bedford became almost as famous for the manufacture of art glass as it was for whaling. Economic and social change accelerated and created new tastes in art, architecture, decoration, literature, fashion, and recreation, in addition to everyday business and residential lifestyles. This included a growing interest in art glass, beginning in 1837 with the Mount Washington Glass Works. Lamps were just one of many products made by the glass factories of New Bedford. The first of these factories, the New Bedford Glass Company, was built in 1866 by renegade glassworkers from the Boston and Sandwich Glass Company, located in the town of Sandwich on nearby Cape Cod. Their effort failed almost immediately, and their building was purchased in 1869 by the Mount Washington Glass Works, a business that had been operating in South Boston since the 1830s. The relocation of the business to New Bedford proved successful. In 1894, the Mount Washington Company was absorbed by the Pierpoint Manufacturing Company, which specialized in the production of silver-plated metalware. In 1900, the combined businesses became the Pierpoint Corporation. Pierpoint operated successfully into the 1930s, before enduring a number of reorganizations and eventually closing in 1957. During the height of the Victorian era, the Mount Washington Glass Works served as a leading innovator in the field of decorative art glass. Numerous patents were taken out for the production of exotic color treatments and ornate decorative styles. Rich cut glass, elaborate chandeliers, and utilitarian ware were also produced. During the 1920s, the products of the Pierpoint Corporation were strongly influenced by the growing popularity of the Swedish modern style. This glass was high in quality and correspondingly expensive. It competed successfully with its most famous rival, Steuben, of Corning, New York. Inexpensive European imports following the end of World War II finally put the New Bedford glassmakers out of business, but the legacy of New Bedford glass lives on. Chapter 13, Profile of Henrietta Howland Robinson Green. Hetty Green, 1834 to 1916, whose infamous frugality stemmed from her Quaker upbringing, was born in New Bedford to wealthy and successful Quaker New Bedford whaling agent and oil manufacturer Edward Mott Robinson and his wife Abby Howland. From a very young age, Hetty assisted her father in his financial dealings, even becoming his bookkeeper at the age of 15. Her favorite place as a child was with him on the waterfront, following his daily rounds, listening to him talk shop, and reading the Financial Times. As an adult, she devoted her life to the acquisition of money. going so far as to challenge the will of her aunt Sylvia Ann Howland. It was a famously protracted and well-publicized court case, Mandel versus Howland, for the $2 million residue of the estate of her grandfather, Isaac Howland Jr. Her business involvement was uncommon in an era where women could not yet vote. Her financial acumen was exceptional. Scrappy and hard-hearted, she amassed a large fortune hoarding and selling real estate, railroads, and mines, although her greatest source of wealth was from money lending. She got rich by investing, doing battle with the financial big boys, and beating them at their own game. At the end of her life, the $7.5 million that she had originally inherited from her father had ballooned to between $100 million and $200 million, about $27 billion in today's dollars, making her an icon of the Gilded Age of American wealth. The habit of frugality and independence served her well. Her husband, Edward Green, was undisciplined in his financial management, and Hetty had taken the unusual precaution of a prenuptial agreement when they married in 1867. They had two children, Sylvia Ann Howland Robinson Green and Edward Howland Robinson Green, who inherited her fortune. Edward, known locally as Colonel Green, owned the expansive estate at Round Hill in South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. The Charles W. Morgan, the last square-rigged American whaling vessel, was on display at Round Hill from the mid-1920s until the mid-1930s. Chapter 13, Profiles of Henry Plimpton Kendall and Henry Way Kendall. Henry P. Kendall, 1878 to 1959, founder of the Kendall Company, was a prominent industrialist and an influential shaper of textile industry policy in the first half of the 20th century. He founded the Kendall Whaling Museum in Sharon, Massachusetts in 1955 after collecting whaling-related materials since the 1920s. A man of many interests, he was an accomplished outdoorsman and sailor, as well as a collector and preserver of historical and cultural materials. His son, Henry Way Kendall, 1926 to 1999, followed in his footsteps and continued an active interest in the museum. He was a distinguished American nuclear physicist and was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1990, along with two colleagues for their work on subatomic particles. Following Henry Way's untimely death in a diving accident, the Kendall family gifted the entire collection of over 200,000 items to the New Bedford Whaling Museum, making this the largest single donation in the old Dartmouth Historical Society's history.